November 28, 2020. It's the Watt Pedro Show. Yeah. For Pedro Show. We started with Nature Boy, the first version from John Coltrane. Of course, it's an old-time standard. Happy Saturday, everybody. Then we heard Way Gone, Man by Adele Berthe with the Anubian Lights. And my guest here from the Happy, Los Feliz, Adele Berthe. Welcome aboard, Adele.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Mike.
No problem. Now, Adele, please tell me your earliest musical memory.
Wow. My grandmother played piano she played honky tonk piano in speakeasies during the Depression to make a living. And she was a badass. She could play like nobody's business. She had that left hand, that rhythm, you know, and she played by ear. And, I would sit with her when she played the piano, and she taught me how to sing harmonies to people like the Boswell sisters and the Andrews sisters. And, Yeah, those were my first musical memories.
And where was this?
Oh, this was in Cleveland. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay, well, I'm going to get the mind reading thing down, but until then, you're going to have to use words with me. So, Cleveland, of course, because the big connect with Peter Lochner, and we'll get to that in your book and all that, but you're also a music lady. Okay, and that's why I want to go through your journey here. So your grandma's playing piano. So there's a piano in the pad where you grew up?
Not in my house, in my grandma's house, but I was always over there because, you know, I just fell in love with music. And also my mother was a dancer in music hall in Cleveland. And, you know, like people would, like Joel Gray would they kind of started out in their musical theater lives in Cleveland. So my mother was a dancer, and there was always music around my house too. And she loved musicals, you know, like stuff like West Side Story, and she was always dancing around the house, you know, half naked.
Well, you get to do that because it's your bed.
That's right. That's
you know, these
right.
people, they're complaining about having to wear masks. They all wear fucking pants.
Exactly. But, you know,
but in your pad, you don't have to.
That's right. And you know, so, of course, I connected the erotic with music when I was really, really young because of that. So, you know.
Yeah, her instrument was her voice.
Her instrument was her body.
Oh, okay. Well, you said she was singing and shit because your grandma did piano. But
yeah,
she,
the grandmother was the voice. The mother was the body.
Okay. But she said she was singing naked. So, dancing. Maybe she was accompanying herself.
She was.
Okay. Okay. But for you, there's no real musical instruments in the pad where you grew up, but you learned to use your voice.
Yeah. You know, music, I remember when I would first hear singers like Dionne Warwick, you know, when she would sing those Burt Bacharach songs or Dusty Springfield, because there were some serious divas on the radio in the '60s. And I mean, I would literally get the chills listening to these women, and those melodies. And, I had kind of a rough, childhood. So I embraced singing and singing became my little secret place where I could, you know, kind of go in the backyard in behind the garage and sing to myself. And, you know, it was a comfort. Music was always a big comfort in my life.
What about at school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
Not really. It's interesting. What happened was I grew up in foster homes and went to a couple of reformatories in Cleveland, one of which was a Catholic, school on a convent. And then, so there was some choir stuff going on there, but it wasn't until I got to Blossom Hill, which was more of a high security reformatory. And it was probably about 80% black girls. And we had a choice that we could either go to Baptist on Sundays or Catholic services on Sundays. So, of course, you know, the Baptists had the music. So I would go and sing with the girls there. And it kind of saved my ass, Mike, because there were some tough girls in there. And you know, Cleveland was a very segregated city. So I didn't grow up with black girls as a wee child, but then those black girls in Blossom Hill embraced me because I could sing, you know?
Sure.
So it saved me, really. And I just fell in love with gospel music at that point in my life, you know?
Yeah, you know, I always ask about the schooling because some schools, you know, got rid of their music departments. But to hear music in a reform, my buddy of mine got put in prison and for 8-9 years, and music, he learned stand-up bass and stuff. So in these kind of situations, I could see the, like, kind of sanctuary.
Uh-huh. You know, I do you know Wayne Kramer?
Yeah, of course. Brother Wayne Kramer.
Yeah, you probably played with him a lot. I used to work with him in his organization's Yale Guitar Doors, and we'd go into Twin Towers and teach guys how to write songs, and that was very revelatory. Because I also worked at the Linwood Jail for women, but I'll tell you, the guys were more vulnerable and more open to expressing their feelings than the women were. It was very, very interesting. The women were a lot more shut down when it came to writing lyrics and expressing themselves.
Well, where I the think guys, like, I think down. That's where the church helps, because, you know, a lot of rock and roll singers started in church because, yeah, you can let go.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Now, did you do the thing, because of your situation, you know, reform schools and stuff, but did you do a garage band, a bedroom band, a basement band, sing with your friends after school?
Before I was carted off to my first foster home, I used to play in a band with my foster family's brother and a couple of his friends, and we'd play Little Bit of Soul. Remember that song?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I learned how to play the bass notes on an acoustic guitar for that song. So yeah, there was a little jamming going on in that particular foster home.
But you weren't writing your own material.
No, we were playing covers and stuff.
Yeah, well, same thing when I was young. We learned by copying off records. I want to play Wild Winter.
Ah, okay.
I'm the kid. welcome to Eye on Africa. I'm Rochelle Ferguson, BI, with the top stories on the continent. Benin officially requests that thrones, statues and jewels looted by France in 1892 be returned to their rightful home in the West African nation, but the response from France is no. We explore why.
Next to a first for a former French colony, Benin has officially requested that artefacts which were looted by France in 1892 be returned. A collection of thrones, statues and jewels are currently on display at Paris's Musée du Quai de Branly. The quest has fallen on deaf ears, and despite a letter from Benin's president, France has officially denied the request.
In the Quai Branly Museum in Paris, you can find many artefacts from Benin. Royal statues, doors, thrones. President Patrice Talon asked for them back. But French Foreign Minister Jean-Marc Ayrault has refused in the letter seen by France 24. Paris signed a convention against looting artefacts in 1997, but it cannot be used retroactively. The objects from Benin have been in France for more than a century, he said.
And France cannot claim to be a country defending human rights if it defends looting.
In the streets of Cotonou, everyone wants the return of the statues and thrones.
It's true, France kept them for a long time, but France must listen to Benin's demand. They belong here.
They must give back our heritage.
I'm Never ending dream.
Watford Pedro show. Yeah, Wild Winter, Adele Berté with Anubian Lights. And then we had from brand new, from Nappy Napa, he's got a solo record. And there's three parts of Eyes on Africa, the intro, part two, and part three. Then something I got from Adele, James Chance. I got, last time I saw him was many years ago, but it was still in 2000s. And because I hadn't seen him since, what, like the early 80s. So it was good to see him again. And he was singing. It was the Stooges were playing with the Queen Mary. I think it was 2004. So 16 years
ago. Yeah.
Anyway, I can't stand myself. This is great. He would be the Whites or the Blacks. Or he had all kinds of names for his bands. But it was always him singing that with that great voice and playing sax. And it was just great grooves. Yeah, love it. Then Hellbeans after that from Brighton, England with a solo demo of Hot Wired, Ready to Blow. Kishibashi after that, Never Ending Dream, brand new. The Bloods, this is something I got from you. Blue Chevrolet, something live. Then Rumper Roost and St. George. One of these is the Nom de Plume for Delia Derbyshire, who is a big pioneer in electronic music. And she performed the first version of the Doctor Who theme. No synthesizer. We're talking cut and tape and shit, right? Early 60s. And that was called Nightwalk, a record she made with two of her colleagues at the Sound Workshop at BBC in the late 60s. Wow. And then Even the Pain Has Changed from Dose. Dose, Bustamante Trace coming out first time on vinyl. Kill Rock Stars. And then finally Adele Berté with Can't Stop the Dance.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, you became like a dance singer, and but we'll get to that. So the reform school thing must have ended at one point, and what did you think about, like, further, like, college or further music or further dancing or what?
I had such a chip on my shoulder about education because I didn't really I mean, the level of classes that they were teaching in Blossom Hill was just absurd. So I didn't feel I wanted to pursue music, really. I mean, the first job I had was working for a veterans hospital in the occupational therapy department when I was emancipated at 17. So that was fascinating. And then I started singing in gay bars, doing Joel Grey, the cabaret, you know, soundtrack with a bunch of drag queens. We would put on shows and I would actually sing live instead of mime to the tracks. So that was fun.
You know, I forgot to ask you, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
Oh, wow. I think it was Meet the Beatles.
Beat the Beatles.
Meet the Beatles. I was like, you know, I think that was 60... I was maybe 9 or 10 years old.
And what was the first gig you went and saw?
The first gig I went and saw, I believe it was, my grandmother took me to the Grand Ole Opry, and I saw Dolly Parton, and I can't remember who else was on stage, but I was really young. I was like 8 or 9.
In Nashville?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you guys were on a trip or something?
Yeah, we went on a little drive, and yeah, I remember that.
Okay,
that
back to the gay bars and doing Joel Grey, because these are your first gigs.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though the backing band is kind of, what was it, a record or something, and you're singing over? Okay.
Yeah, they were just playing the tracks from the actual soundtrack, and I would sing along live to, you know, Willkommen and introducing the queens and everything. So.
Right, because it takes place in Weimar, Germany. So you got a Deutsch accent going.
Exactly, yeah.
Had you seen the Liza Minnelli movie with Joel Grey?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so you were kind of doing her.
I was doing him. I was doing Joel.
Oh, you were doing Joel, and he's kind of he's the MC.
He's the MC. I was the MC, and the queens were doing, you know, Liza and the dance.
Sure. I understand now. I understand. Yeah. Because, believe it or not, you know, there's like roots in the punk scene with that. People don't really realize this, right? They think of suburbs and slam dancing and teenage boys. But actually, the punk scene was more women when it first came out in the Hollywood scene here. And maybe in Cleveland was like that, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people, they don't talk too much about the, you know, the women of Cleveland that ended up doing punk music or, you know, moving to New York to do punk. I mean, the girls from the Bush Tetras were from Cleveland.
Sure,
you know, we all came to New York around the same time. But New York in 1977 on was just like so many women from all over the world.
But you know, the connect goes deeper. I think Velvet Underground played Cleveland 23 times. Bob Quine taped them all. But there was always been a connect on the underground with Cleveland and New York City.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Peter helped television get their first gig in Cleveland.
I had Richard Lloyd on the show a couple episodes ago.
Oh, I love Richard Lloyd. He's what an amazing guitar player. And his book is incredible.
I read it 3 days. I couldn't put it down.
Yeah, it was fascinating. I love his writing.
Yeah, and so the women, part of the early punk scene, nobody's really talked about this. I'm so glad about your book. Maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves, but people, a lot of the stuff we're going over here, Adele has put in her book. And part of it is the story of Pete Lochner.
Right. Yes. Right. Peter Lochner.
Now, you meet him in these scenes, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I wanted to sing, but I looked like a little dude, you know, little boy, you know, like I would wear apple caps and flea-bitten suits. And so I wasn't... I wasn't exactly the kind of girl that, you know, would be, like, if I was aspiring to be a singer, you know, everybody on the charts looked like Helen Reddy, you know? So it wasn't...
You just lost her, huh?
Yeah. Did you see the movie about her?
No, but, you know, she was pretty balls out. I remember in the day, she took a lot of shit from assholes.
She sure did. Didn't a lot of women, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was, you know, I was the anomaly, and I didn't think I would ever have a chance doing music, but I loved to sing. So I got up with a cover band one time that was like a kind of a blues cover band in Cleveland, and they let me sing a song, and I sang Peace of My Heart by Janis Joplin because they knew it. And Peter happened to be in the audience, so he came up to me afterwards. I mean, I was a nervous wreck. And I knew who he was because he was a legend in Cleveland at that point. This was 1976. And he said, wow, you know, you're really good. And I do music. Let's do some music together sometime. And, you know, I was terrified because this is like the main dude in Cleveland. Who everybody talked about this dude like he was, you know, he was a genius. He was a fuck up. He was, you know... dangerous. He was just, you know, a loser. So there were all these epithets about the guy, but the guy that I met was really gentle and sweet and very, you know, generous with his compliments. So I ended up following up, and then we became really good friends, and I ended up sharing his apartment with him and doing a band with him. And
tell me about the band. What was the first gig like?
The first gig was, I think it was at the Pirate's Cove.
Yeah, I later played there when it was called Peabody's Down Under.
Ah, yeah, right.
It was actually, I was told it was the first warehouse in like Andrew Carnegie's empire or some shit.
It could be. I mean, there, to me, Cleveland's history, especially the flats, it's fascinating.
Flats, yeah.
You know, it's just amazing. Like, but anyway, we had this band called The Wolves, and I think it was the Pirate's Cove. It's very foggy to me, Mike, because I got to tell you, I was drinking really heavily during those days. I was kind of trying to keep up with
Peter. Yeah, I was going to say, it ended up killing Peter. I mean, we've all been through, I understand. So it's a Watt from Pivo show. There's no hard questions and there's no wrong answers.
Right. Thank God for that. Well, but no, I think it was the Pirate's Cove. Him and I traded off lead vocals. I would play a little guitar. He gave me a beautiful Fender Duosonic, 1957.
So you, because you mentioned something about playing some notes on a guitar. So you had learned guitar.
Yeah, very basic, you know, progressions and chords. I was so heartbroken because later when I moved to New York, the guitar was stolen. Somebody nicked it from me at CBGB's one night.
Well, like we say in Pedro, you donated it. We're always optimists here. So look, that first gig with it was called The Wolves.
The Wolves.
The Wolves.
Yeah.
Wolves. It was just a duet?
No. We had Leo Ryan was on drums. A guy named Al Dennis was on guitar. And I think we had a second guitarist, but it's all so vague to me.
What about bass?
Bass. Al Dennis was on bass. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, he was on bass. You should have been there playing bass.
I would have. But you guys actually had three guitars. If you were playing that other dude and Peter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Rick, a guy named Rick Callister, might have played a couple of gigs with us on guitar.
Remember the first song you sang with him on stage?
I think it was... Jesus, Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Bobby Dylan.
Yeah.
So how were you received by the gig goers?
People responded well. I mean, you know, it's not like we had like huge crowds or anything, but.
No, I mean that first gig, because you'd only have the first gig once, so I'm just curious.
Right, exactly. No, people were very, you know, very like, you know, yelling and clapping and stomping and, you know.
Yeah,
it was interesting.
No cups of piss or sacks of shit or batteries.
No gobbin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that word.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. Luckily, no bodily fluids were thrown.
Yeah, or shared. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, November 28, 2020. Dishwap Pedro Show special guest, Adele Berté. Hold tight for hour two. November 28, 2020, it's the second hour of the Wap Pedro Show.
Water when the lights go down. to get from gone to here. Well, I don't know how. I'm on a highway south of somewhere. I'm just a memory to you now. And the sound of the wheels on the road, like a condemned man's moan. And there's no such place as home. There's no such place as home. The wind blows forward, but it ain't blowing back. Stretch it to infinity, an endless railroad track. The rails are made of promises, the cross ties on my daddy's bones, and there's no such place as home. There's no such place as home. Oh, lovers and other vandals, they've ransacked my soul. I hear the grave digger whistling as he digs his hole. And the funeral goers, shoulder to shoulder, each one of them so alone. And there's no such place as home. Now tomorrow and the next day and all the days after that, they're just pennies that land in the gutter. They keep missing the blind man's hat. Tarnished little dreams that roll away as hope sinks like a stone. And there's no such place as home. There's no such place as home.
Thank you.
Pedro Show. We start off the second hour with Adele Berté with Hollywood. There must be a story behind that. I remember the first time I rode a bike to first see Hollywood. You know, I came here when I was 9, but it was 15. Mm-hmm. And I rode a bicycle and was like, man, this kind of looks like Long Beach. It took all day to get up there. I went by the beachway, the sidewalk called the Strand. It starts in Torrance and all up this thing. And then I turned up on Sunset, which was the last part of the old Route 66. And but anyway, I never wrote a song about it. Sam Bennett after that from Tokyo with No Such Place as Home. Agnes Steck out of Austin with Lingnopod Strut. What the fuck? Maybe some kind of dance. Plutonium Farmers, Land of Sunsets. Golden out of Tokyo with a demo called No Name. Probably doesn't, it's untitled, yeah. And then finally, This Stolen Heart, Adele Berté. Okay, so what happens with the Wolves after that first gig?
Well, you know, something was going on with Peter where, like, when I first hung out with him, you know, we were drinking together and there was some drugging and, you know, but it seemed to be under control. And then it started to escalate, right? And it just became a little too dark where you know, you would go on a binge for 3 days and then have to recover from it for a week because, you know, you felt like a pancake. Yeah, exactly. So, so things, you know, were getting darker in terms of his addictions too. And, a lot of it was about what people thought of him. He was very conscious of that, like this myth making around himself, because he was essentially a singer-songwriter. Like when I lived with the guy, he loved people like Woody Guthrie and Dylan and Richard and Linda Thomas and, you know, like more of the singer-songwriters
Right, because people assume he's a big rock and roller punk scene. But, yeah, he's an acoustic guitar player.
I mean, he could play the blues. I mean, he could play a Robert Johnson song like nobody's business on his dobro, you know. I mean, the guy was a phenomenal player.
But we should also tell people he was pretty young.
Yes, he was 24 years old when he died.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, and oh man, I write about some of the adventures we had together in the book. I mean, you know, we had this kind of like romantic, not in a sexual sense, but this idea about ourselves that we were kind of like the punk Bonnie and Clyde, right? So we show up at a party with our guitars and guns, you know, like he carried a Walther PPK that his dad had gifted him because his dad was
because I heard a story where they scared the television guys by pulling out a gun.
He would do that. He was creating this myth about himself, and when he would get really fucked up, sometimes, you know, we would be in the living room and I'd be like, you know, reading or something, or we'd be listening to records and he'd be on the phone with somebody like Richard Hell, who he had like this kind of cantankerous relationship with. And, all of a sudden he'd get off the phone, he'd be pissed off and he'd start shooting at a picture of Richard tacked up on the wall.
Oh, fuck. You know, Richard Hell was my first punk rock hero.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Richard
was really big in my life. I put a picture of him on my bass, and that was like a line in the sand here in Pedro.
Wow.
Like rock and roll, well, supposedly, they were actually from Arena Rock. It was like, fucking knew you were going to be into that shit. And, you know, but, you know, I couldn't believe that the bass player actually led the band, wrote the songs. I thought bass was where you put your retarded friend.
Wow. No, it's true. He was an amazing performer and bass player. And that first record, my God.
Yeah, I love it. Love it. The big effect on D Boone, too. Here, I want to play When It's Over.
Yeah. baby, I'm a lonely girl. Calling from the other side of the world. Too many days, too many lonely nights. I've been alone with no love to call my own. But I hope and I pray soon will come the day when you will believe in me. Are you gonna believe in me?
Pedro show, yeah, when it's over, from Adele Berté.
And then Scritti Politti in the house. I did that with them.
Oh, wow. Oh, because they changed. This is when they came to New York City and were going to be a dance band, right?
Well, you know, they had done that brilliant record, and then I was working with David Gamson and Fred Marr from Scritti. They produced that record for me, and Green is the guy who sings the
main guy, yeah. The other two guys got kicked out. I'm talking about the first records, the 7 inches. They were great, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They were called like Beef Block Bologna and Bologna, Bologna. And then the other one was called Four A-Sides or something about OPEC. But then he switches gears. He gets rid of the other two guys. Okay. Parallel Pyres after that with East Third Rain. A Mint Douche from England, I found out, not Australia. That's so embarrassing, right? You get the accent wrong. Fuck. Talking to Me, I guess that's Travis Bickle, right? Quote. Gaffa with For Once Good. They're Czech people. Sea Level out of Cleveland. Yeah, this is a young teacher. He's got a band on the side.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, named David. Good guy.
Wow.
Halfway there. And then History with Queen of the Breadline. Lewis Cole, A Little Bit More Time. And finally, Believe in Me, Adele Berté. So, okay, let's continue. It's kind of hard living with Peter in Cleveland.
Yeah. So... things were getting rough, and I was you know, becoming physically ill from what I was imbibing and trying to keep up with them, and I had to kind of yank myself out of the situation, so I moved out. He was becoming wilder. He showed up at one of our rehearsals and was just kind of falling down on the floor and waving the gun around, and we just, you know, I just took off, and actually the bass player, Al Dennis, helped me figure out how to end it with, you know, we actually had to ask him to leave the band, but this was his pattern. He would create all these amazing bands, you know, from Rocket from the Tombs to Peru Ubu to Friction, all these bands that he would create, he would end up sabotaging himself via his drinking and drugging and erratic behavior. And it was such a shame because he couldn't be what he really wanted to be. I mean, the guy could write a punk song like nobody's business. I mean, you know, Ain't It Fun?
Yeah, and Amphetamine.
Yeah, yeah. And so he could out-punk the best of the punks, but essentially, that's not what he really wanted to do. He wanted to be a singer-songwriter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I get that sense, too, especially when Frank put out the box with all the stuff that he found. I got to play a lot of that. I had Frank on the show, and we played a lot. And you can see how deep he was musically.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the punk scene was kind of full of people like that. You wouldn't believe how deep. You know, the cartoon little kid thing was actually, you know, he was pretty young. Over here in Hollywood, there was older people. Like, he reminds me of Darby or something.
Right, right,
you know, the germ singer, somebody incredibly real talented. But so when did you make the move to New York City?
Well, what happened was, you know, he left the band. I did one gig with that band, The Wolves, without Peter and with a different guitar player. And I, my heart wasn't in it because it was all about him for me.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
He was my mentor. He got me started. And our plan had always been to move to New York City because the first time we visited New York City together, we stayed at Lester Bang's house. Now, talk about an intro. York City, right?
Yeah.
And I write about that in the book. It was a wild weekend. But so I decided to go to New York for a weekend because I knew a couple of people that had moved there. Bradley Fields, who played drums in Teenage Jesus and
the Jerks. Not drums. If you look at the record cover, it says drum.
I know. All he did was play that one snare, that one stick. That was it. That was
Orphans, right? Running through the bloody snow.
Right? Oh, my God. That was the perfect song for No Wave. You know, I heard that. I thought, oh, yes, I'm home. I found my tribe.
But, okay. Look, we're at the end of the scene. We've got to continue because we're at the second end of the second hour, the November 27, 2020 edition of the WAP from Pedro Show with special guest Adelbert Day. Hold tight for hour three. November 28, 2020. It's the third hour of the WAP from Pedro Show.
Backstreet Boy, and anyone will tell you so. An eye on the moon, here for the 102, for the kids with no place to go. Now, but me and Scotty were talking. That nervous way that we always did. It was then I realized I had something there to show him. But that I would have to keep it in. So I said, I'm gonna walk on down in the alley. Down where the light shines so very dimly. shake hands with all the creatures that I meet. With Miss Cinderella Backstreet. I tried to teach naivete to kids brought up on TV. I tried hard to smile, yet hung up in style. It seems they saw right through me. You know, me and Ricky were talking in between all the noise, the smoke and the jive. And I said, playing those blues that you learned from the English dudes. Oh, does it really satisfy? I said to him, me, I'm gonna walk on down. Down where the light shines so very dimly, where the etiquette walks on silent 30 feet. But Miss Cinderella in the back street. One down for the leather boys, and one for the never been kissed. Still another for all the ambulance dead. Ah, we somehow seem to miss. And one more just to dream on. And you know, still another one for the show. Well, Denise, she did my eyes, and I felt just like a prize. Until the tears began to flow. And I had to go outside and take care of some business with a gentleman from Morningside Avenue, who introduced me to his very best friend from Denver. He took me aside and advised me just what it was that I should do. I said to him, right now I'm gonna walk on down in the alley, down where the light shines so very dimly. Ah, well, the night is so complete with Miss Cinderella Backstreet. I'm gonna walk on down in the alley, down where the light shines so very dimly. Well, the etiquette walks on silent padded feet with Miss Cinderella in the back street. Miss Cinderella in the back street. Miss Cinderella in the back street.
raised eyebrows, middle fingers, no mistake, no regret, no promises, and no rent. So long, saving grace. So long, saving grace. We are supposed to be troubled, not understanding the heatness on the dust.
Can't do any better to me.
Pedro Show. We started the third hour off with Peter Lochner doing Cinderella Backstreet. And Cinderella Backstreet is not just a song, it was a band, and it's the first time Adele saw Peter at a club in Cleveland called The Change. It's in the book. We should tell people about this book, what the title of it and where they can find it.
Okay. The book is called Peter and the Wolves, and it's been published by the same company, Smogvale, that put out the Peter Lochner 5-LP Beautiful Box Set.
Frank.
And you can find it in your, select record stores and bookstores, if they're even open right now. But you can also buy it from smogvale.com, or it's also on sale at Amazon. I think it's 15% off right now at Amazon, but if you buy it from Smogvale, you get free shipping.
Yeah, smogvile.com, people. Frank over there is great. He was too young to be part of the old Cleveland scene, but he's done so much to let people know about it.
Exactly. No, Frank is such a good guy, and he's in love with everything Cleveland, you know. He's really put Cleveland on the map, and, you know, how important it was to early punk.
I think he's living in Florida now, but he loves Cleveland. I know that.
Yes, he does, for sure.
Let's get back to your journey. You're in New York City now, Bradley.
So I'm in New York City for a weekend, just checking it out. And I'm at CBGB's, and I tell this story in the book. And Bradley comes up to me and says, Peter Lochner's dead.
And then
Lester Bangs, you know, I see Lester, and I realize that it's true. And I was you know how it is, Mike, when one of your closest people dies and you're young, you know, and it's your first huge loss.
Yeah,
and
it's devastating.
It's so devastating. And I came back to Cleveland, went to his wake, which was just, my God. I write about all this in the book, but then, like, there was nothing left for me in Cleveland after he died, and we had always planned to move to New York together. So I just took off. Like, within a month of his death, I moved to New York. And within 3 months, I was in the Contortions.
Right.
So everything happened quite rapidly, you know.
People at the beginning of the show, I played some Chance, Jeff Chance, and that's Contortions. And you're in the band. And band, and lots of torn and lots of wild stuff.
Oh, my gosh. Yep. I mean, we were very influenced by the Stooges.
Absolutely.
Funhouse's antics, you know what I mean?
Sure. And I can hear Funhouse all over it.
Oh, yeah.
Brother Steve McKay.
Funhouse meets the funk.
Yeah. Well, you know, Brother Steve told me they get... You know, because he took his job right at the record store there in Ann Arbor.
Uh-huh.
And he says, I want Maceo on L. So Brother Steve said, yeah, okay. Here you go. You know, and they were kind of doing a psychedelic Jim Brown, you know.
Yeah. You know, I was playing keyboards, and I'm not a keyboard player, but I was playing clusters like Sun Ra.
How did you get in the Contortions?
I saw them playing at Bradley and Lydia's Loft, the original Contortions. It was just James Nares, who's a brilliant artist and painter, Jamie, whose name is Jamie now, and Pat Place.
Right.
Completely androgynous. I couldn't figure out if she was a man or a woman or a tweener.
By great guitar.
Oh, my God. Great. And she's just she was playing slide guitar like something I'd never heard. It was like, you know, an alien, very bizarre and incredible. And James was honking away on his sax. And I just sat down on a very minimal drum set. There was more than one drum. And I just started playing.
Was it like a bum rush? You just...
Yeah. I just sat in,
that because James was very confrontational. He would fight members of the audience.
Oh, yeah. Me and George Scott. Have you heard about George Scott, the bass player? George Scott was an amazing bass player. He died of an overdose.
Very young.
But George was playing bass. I was playing keyboards. James would dive into the audience and find a girl and start trying to make out with her right in front of her boyfriend. And the boyfriend would start slugging him. And then George and I would jump from the stage into the to protect him, and like fisticuffs would be flying, right? And the rest of the band was still playing.
Of course, you got to keep the groove. You got to keep the groove, Adele.
Of course.
Look, I want to play something from Peter that you gave me, a 3220 blues.
Oh, yeah.
This is my change of someone else's arrangement of a Robert Johnson song called 3220 Blues. It's about a gun, 3220 caliber gun. Yeah, I don't think they make them anymore, handguns anymore, at least, I don't know. They build it on a 45 frame, shoot down a car, shoot down anything. It's real phallic.
Pedro Show. Last music for this edition, Peter Lochner, 3220 Blues. And then Huma with Proxy from their new stuff. Toke Punt, Under the Influence of Liars. But we got that boot off our neck, huh? If the cat, we can get the pry bar out of that little desk.
Right.
IMMR after that, Science Facts. I think Chi-Town. I think he's a DJ.
Oh.
Why not? You know, a Sly Stone started as a DJ, you know.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
He did. Yeah, yeah. That's why you're on the show. Up in the city in San Francisco. That's why his music has all kinds of sounds, I think, because...
Wow.
Yeah. And then finally, Per Ubu with Final Solution.
And, right.
Peter's on there. He's the starting of this band that was very influential on a lot of people, including us Minuteman. So, okay, so you're in the Contortions.
Right.
And we only have a lot of time left, but you end up like singing on some disco, some dance records.
Yeah,
And how did you end up in SoCal?
It was after my record deal with Chrysalis ended. I went on tour with Tears for Fears as a backing singer for their Sowing the Seeds of Love tour. And after that, you know, I was just so through with the music industry, the corporate music industry.
The racket.
Yeah, the racket. You know, I had so
That's
many,
what Elvis called it. You know, he was doing this interview, Louisiana Hayride or something, and he goes, music business, and he corrects himself, no racket, I wish it was a business.
Yeah, right.
And
I mean,
then
the guy
starts accusing him of being on marijuana.
I mean, anybody that's got, like, you know, 400 accountants and two A&R men, you know what they're up to, right?
So you quit that racket.
So I quit the racket and decided to start writing. I really wanted to write. I mean, I've always been a storyteller, so if I tell a story in words on paper or on a film or whatever. But I came out here and started working on my craft as a writer, and... yeah, so now I'm writing books for now. I mean, I'll always do music, but, you know, I love writing. I absolutely fell in love with language and putting words together to...
Well, people who want to read your writing, where can they find you on the internet?
www.adelberte.com.
Let's spell that, people. adelberte.com.
You got it.
And
what
are you writing right now? Are you on? Because we're in quarantino mode.
Right. Well, I just finished. I have a book coming out about LaBelle, Patti LaBelle, Nona Hendrix.
Sure, great singer. I saw that. I saw that band do the Don Kirster. They used to film those Don Kirster rock concerts. Long Beach Auditorium.
Did you see them in their silver days?
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yes.
Like kind of space outfits and shit. Cowbell and good beats. And that venue, was the back where they filmed those, but the front part is where me and D. Boone saw our first rock concert. It was T-Rex.
Oh, man. Wow. Yeah, I love those Don Kirshner concerts.
Okay, so you're writing a book about Patti LaBelle, or the band was just called LaBelle, right?
Yeah,
she
the band.
Had a sister in there and...
So that's coming out in March. But now I'm working on a book called No New York, which is all about what we've been talking about, you know.
No Wave.
The No Wave scene in New York. And
I can't wait to read it, man. Wow.
Yeah, that one I'm hoping to get a good deal for. Because a lot of it has to do with all the women that were playing.
Absolutely. And people got to know this, or they'll reinvent it into some little corny-ass shit.
Right? Thank you, Mike. Stand up. Girls, right?
Absolutely. It's been a big honor to have you on board, Adele. When you get this book out, will you come back on the show and we can talk about it?
You know I will, but one last thing.
Bring.
I want to hear Il Sogno del Marinaio. I want to hear more.
Just finished the third album. I've been with these guys for 10 years. The main man is Stefano Paglia, originally from Genoa.
Yeah.
But he went to school in the oldest university in Europe, right, Bologna.
Uh-huh.
And he invited me aboard, and I collaborate. It's kind of avant-garde. We recorded this third album, though, here in Pedro.
Wow.
And it'll be out. It's coming out soon.
Well, if you ever need a little female vocal in winding around in there anywhere, you call me, okay?
I promise. Okay. Thank you so much. And come back on with that new No Wave, people.
New York. Yep. Okay, thank you for
Mike. Absolute. People, thank it's been the November 28, 2020 edition of WAPP P-Rush. Will keep your powder dry.